Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Nonprofit U, a forum where nonprofit stakeholders can share lessons learned and discuss the latest developments in the industry. My name is Valerie Leonard, your host. I'm a consultant to nonprofits, and I specialize in community and organizational development. I work with nonprofit organizations and help them make a stronger impact to their clients and communities. You can find Nonprofit U on Facebook and Twitter, and I encourage you to comment early and often using the hashtags Nonprofit U, Illinois African American Families Commission, Illinois Budget Cuts, or the least of these. You can also leave comments on blogtalkradio.com/nonprofit_U. The chat room is open, and you can post comments and questions. In order to use the chat room, you must open a listener-only account. You'll find a link to open the account on the episodes page, and you can also email me questions at consulting@valeriefleonard.com or send messages through Facebook and Twitter. You'll find a Nonprofit U fan page on Facebook, and the Twitter account is @NonprofitU. We'll be taking questions by phone and from our chat room at about the 20-minute mark. And the call-in number is 347-884-8121. Again, that number is 347-884-8121. If you forget the number, if you're watching the episodes page, it's on the top of the page. Today's episode is the Illinois Budget Showdown. Who will care for the least of these? We'll talk about the fallout from the lack of an Illinois state budget. And again, we encourage you to call in with questions and to participate in live chats at about the 20-minute mark. The call-in number is 347-884-8121. Nonprofit and economic development professionals are especially encouraged to call in and share your war stories and your strategies. Our guest for today is Michael Holmes. Mike is the Executive Director of the Illinois African American Family Commission, or IAAFC for short. The Illinois African American Family Commission develops, evaluates, and advocates for public policies, plans, research, and programs that will strengthen and preserve families, family economics, workforce participation, health status, safety, education and training, and quality of life for African Americans. So you can see they have a very broad scope. The Illinois African American Family Commission is a catalyst that facilitates partnerships between government entities and communities to ensure a safe, healthy, and secure environment for African American children and families throughout the state of Illinois. You can find a bio for Mike on my blog, Nonprofit U, under the Illinois Budget Showdown, Who Will Care for the Least of These? Go to valeriefleonard.com/Nonprofit U, and then click onto the episodes page for more information. So thanks for being on the show today, Mike. It's indeed an honor and a pleasure to have you. Can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and how you got involved with the IAAFC?
Hey, Valerie. Thank you for having the commission on and giving us an opportunity to talk about the work that we're doing. I have been involved in social service development, human service development, youth work, community development for a span of maybe a good close to 20 years. I've been for a good portion of that time engaged in state government and working in state government to try to ensure that the resources and services of state government is provided to the African-American community. And as a result of that work over that time span, I was sort of given the opportunity to come over to the commission a couple of years ago and work on behalf of our community through this vehicle, which is a statutorily required entity that works in partnership with state government to represent African-American communities all over the state of Illinois. So we came in a couple of years ago and began to work on behalf of our communities in developing a strategy that we hope will benefit our communities down the road.
Okay, that's awesome. And what I love is we always hear people say, we need a black agenda. We need a black agenda. Your group not only has developed a black agenda, or shall I say our group, full disclosure, I am part of the group of folks from the community that meet from time to time, for every Tuesday. But what I love is the fact that you do have a bona fide black agenda and you have muscle behind it with the Illinois Black Legislative Caucus.
Yeah, we and I think the biggest thing that we were able to do was to take that bullet point in our statute and facilitate participation of the community with state government. And and that in itself allowed us to be able to last year work with community folk and people around the state to develop what we call the Black Agenda for blacks in the state of Illinois. And we actually was able to share that agenda with leaders, African-American leaders from around the state back in February of this year, where we had over 400 people in attendance. So we've established what we call a Black Agenda, centered around what we think we can get access to or maybe even focus on as it relates to state government and the black community.
That's great. That's great. So when you and I served on a panel together back in April of this year, we were going through a process of better understanding the impacts of Governor Rauner's executive orders and budget cuts in an effort to close a $1.6 billion gap that was for FY 2015 and then a $6 billion budget gap for FY 2016, which is the current budget year that we are in now in the state. So the state of Illinois, they're still without a budget, and it's going on 5 months. It'll be starting the fifth month in a couple weeks after the start of the new fiscal year. And then when we had our discussion last spring, we learned that one of the biggest losers for the FY 2016 budget was the Child Care Assistance Program, or what we call CCAP. The governor proposed eliminating payments for children cared for by a relative, and that would limit parent choice for more than 15,000 families and eliminate care for many families that work in non-traditional hours of the day. He also proposed increasing parent co-pays by 10.5, I'm sorry, not decreasing, increasing parent co-pays by $10.5 million. And then another proposal included limiting CCAP program intake to children 5 years and younger. And as a result, you know, that would eliminate school age after school care and summer programs for more than 100,000 low-income children, you know, between the ages of 6 and 12. So that was what we talked about in April, and we still have no budget. So my question to you is, what's the status of this proposal, and did the governor actually implement these cuts this year?
Those cuts were implemented, and based on legislation, SB 570, which is called that child care bill, those cuts were implemented to the extent that the eligibility for that supplemental service has been impacted by the dollar amounts being reduced, where there was $2,000-some-odd where you could be earning and then still qualify for that supplemental assistance, that dollar amount now is $400-some-odd for you to be able to apply and get that supplemental assistance. So that what it actually did was it created a policy shift, and the state is now implementing a policy change that directly affects the ability of families to get child care in the state of Illinois as they did just last year. So
wow,
it's having a drastic impact on families. So he was able to, not only zero it out in the budget and not fund it, but change it from a policy perspective in terms of how you actually get access to that service.
Okay, so he did that by executive order, unilaterally, no input from the legislature.
Well, they actually created legislation to change the policy. And
okay.
And that's what that legislation does. That legislation literally changes the way people are able to qualify for that service. And so now the Department of Human Services, which is the agency that's required to implement the service, is now saying that you cannot qualify for that service unless you meet this new criteria.
Oh, my goodness. So we've gone from, you know, I'm just doing the numbers basically in my head. We've gone from families who make about $25,000, maybe $30,000, a little under 30, who are qualifying at various levels, right, at sliding scale, down to super poor people who make, what, no more than, is it 600 a month?
$7,000 a year, I think. It's under $7,000 a year. Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness. So in some cases like that, people might choose to not work, right?
Well, people are finding themselves, particularly, you know, young parents, whether they should go to work and try to earn a living, or should they stay home to be able to send their kids child care.
Oh, my goodness. That's horrible. That's almost as bad as seniors having to choose between medicine and housing or medicine and food.
And to a certain extent, we have a situation where seniors are, you know, being asked to do the same thing. The biggest concern is that there are some systemic changes that are occurring, and those systemic changes are changing the way state government and services are being provided to specific populations, and they're going to have a long-term effect, because it changes the opportunity for people to get services that they're accustomed to getting. You know, example, seniors that are receiving Meals on Wheels, it's my understanding that the services have been cut from 5 times a week to 3 times a week. And we know that some of those seniors rely on those meals. Home and home care services for seniors are being cut. So there are specific things that are occurring as a result of, you know, the changes with this budget that is going to have long-term effects on people.
Wow, wow. So another big loser in Governor Rauner's 2016 budget is the Teen Reach program. At least before he announced the cuts, it supported 14,000 disadvantaged youth around the state of Illinois. So the budget is proposing, or he has proposed, eliminating it completely from the 2016 budget. So did this go through, and if it did, what impacts are you seeing?
Yeah, it zeroed out. He zeroed out Teen Reach. And even though I think DHS may want to implement something down the road, they can't do anything without the budget being passed because they have no authority to spend those dollars. But Teen Reach has been one of those programs that for whatever reason get targeted, and that's the only initiative coming out of the state. I used to supervise that program when I was at DHS. That's the only youth initiative that's solely geared toward funding alternative activities in communities for our young people, which can include, you know, college prep. It can include homework help. It can include alternative activities that keeps kids off the street and keep them engaged in things that will sort of somewhat help them to make decisions to not do these negative things that you see kids doing now, which I think to a certain degree might be getting elevated because of the loss of funds in our community for those type of programs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My grandmother used to say, an idle mind is the devil's workshop. So if kids don't have anywhere to go, and they always say, too, that, you know, nature doesn't like a vacuum, so they can find
it's
some
hard
way.
And it took years. I mean, I can remember when it was a a program that was servicing almost a little over 20,000 kids. And for some reason, they target those programs. And it has a real huge impact on the African-American community simply because these are the type of resources and services that our kids get an opportunity to participate in because there's nothing else there. I mean, our community is fighting against all these other institutionalized structures that seem to offer services to other folk first and then us second.
And a recent blog post from Capital Facts, you know, it would seem to suggest that the governor is using this budget cycle as an opportunity to drive a wedge between the legislature and their traditional supporters, and that would include organized labor and leaders of social service programs. And in this case, I'm talking about Democratic legislature. The greatest brunt of the cuts does seem to fall on social service agencies, especially those who seem to have liberal leanings. And a poster who responded to the article suggested that labor leaders build coalitions with community leaders and other social service agencies to raise awareness of the issues and the impacts to the communities. Now, do you agree with that strategy?
I do believe that a strategy that brings people together to start focusing on the issue is a good one. Because there has to be a long-term strategy in this process. Being that now everyone sees that there is a need for a conversation to take place that focuses on how do you get out of a situation that you've been so accustomed to, and then it may not exist as you look forward, that sort of could be viewed as, you know, a good thing. You know, we have been operating in these various silos and, you know, people have been pitted against each other for whatever reason and nobody has really seen a need to come together until now. And so if, in fact, this is bringing these people together, and particularly I think we have to be unified behind a single goal, which is to create good government to benefit people that need government. Clearly we recognize that everybody don't, but those that don't is in few, where the people that need government, that's many. And so government is set up to be able to provide services and help folk. And so if everybody can sit at the table and agree that there has to be a process put in place to ensure that government is there for people that need government, then I think that's a good thing. I think it's a good strategy.
Right. So United Way of Illinois, they surveyed 500 member agencies around the state, and they found that children, low-income families, and the mentally ill, they continue to suffer the effects of inaction in Springfield. In fact, they found that 84% of respondents have cut the number of clients they serve. Now, this is up from 34% in July, so that's not very much time. So we're seeing a dramatic difference. And then they also found that 79% of respondents have cut programs, and most of these, again, impact children and working adults. Are you hearing similar stories from your circles?
Sure. I mean, and even closer than that, it's impacting the commission. The commission has appropriated its funds through the state budget by the Legislative Black Caucus. And so the fact that the budget is not passed and the commission has not been funded in 5 months, so we've laid off staff.
Wow.
And at the time that, you know, we've been continuously trying to operate, we've been incurring expenses and we have all these costs that's out there, and then we have no way of paying those bills because of where the budget is. But we know that there's agencies that are consistently laying off staff, that have, you know, expended their lines of credit, that have dipped into their reserves to the point that they've utilized all those dollars. We know that they then have to reduce the services that they offer to the community. So these are realistic things that are happening in the community with these organizations. So this is the type of impact that this budget impasse is really having on the state.
Wow. Well, and I want to stop and say thank you. Thank you so much for your service. You know, you've been going, you and your staff have been going without pay for over 5 months. And you would never know it on Tuesdays. I mean, everybody is there, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, you know, listening to the concerns of the community. And you rarely bring up your own issues. You're so busy advocating for others. And I really, really do appreciate that. And I really think our listeners should know about that. And I thank God for you, your staff, and the commission, you know, because we really don't have any other apparatus in the whole state. And this is very, very well needed. And then well, when I'm sorry?
No, I'm glad. I was just saying I appreciate that. And I think that's one thing we're trying to help the community recognize, that this is a really important vehicle for the community.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, when I hear your story, I look at where I am in North Lawndale. I feel like our community is being held hostage. You know, this is a community that's one of the poorest in the whole city of Chicago. We depend very heavily on social services, primarily stuff like welfare to work and Medicaid. We've got about 17,000 folks on Medicaid. We have a number of people who, you know, if you qualify for Medicaid, you qualify for a number of other programs that will help you, you know, get off welfare and then work. But, you know, if you're cutting off child care assistance, you know, it makes it very, very difficult for folks to actually do better. So I have to wonder what this governor is thinking. You know, if he's saying on the one hand he wants folks to be independent, but then cutting off their legs as they try to become independent, you know, it just sounds really weird to me.
Yeah, I mean, we've had the opportunity to participate in a press conference with the Black Caucus back in last spring during session. And we sort of put out there that if, in fact, the ideal is to cut back on the dependency of government in our community, then we are simply suggesting that the efforts be geared toward developing an economic base. And mm-hmm. and by doing that, you help infuse resources in the community to the extent that we can begin to look at developing economic opportunities for folk. I think of job creation has to be a major focus.
Mm-hmm.
Business development has to be a major focus in our community. And to the extent that we can begin to develop economic opportunities in the community, then we can see the dependency of human services decrease over a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't just approach it as a, you know, well, we're just going to snatch what you have and, you know, no plan for how you're going to replace that which you take. So
mm-hmm.
so our focus has been, you know, really centered around developing that economic foundation in our communities and getting people to think about entrepreneurship and developing small businesses and hiring people within the community and developing training and building capacity in organizations so that if, in fact, this were to ever happen again, then we're not
mm-hmm.
solely dependent on that one industry, which seemingly has taken our community and sort of put us in a situation where we're really, really impacted by this particular situation right here.
Yes, and put it in perspective, 25% of our workforce is tied up in social services,
mm-hmm.
and compare that to the state, 8%. You know, as bad as us
mm-hmm.
for the state, but, you know, our pain is, what, three times as much, you know, on top of the other issues that we're dealing with.
Right. But, I mean, I sit on a commission for developing a health plan for the state of Illinois, and one of the things that I learned in that group is that the top 10 chronic diseases is we're number one in all top 10.
Mm-hmm.
So African Americans seem to suffer the most in the most critical areas of harm, and there's no strategy being discussed or put forth to get us, you know, out of the category of number one. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. where the state is as a state government, there's a focus and there's resources being put to developing ways to help and assist, you know, addressing these issues. So our focus at the commission is, as you go through that process and as you try to address these issues, then we want to be part of that process and that strategy because we want to see our people do better.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Okay, I see that we have a caller. I want to ask you one more question. We're running a little bit over time. It's about 2:25. I see a caller who may have a question. They may just be listening. But the caller just hung up, so apparently this person did not want to be called on. So
okay.
I'm going to ask you this one more question. And in the meantime, if there are callers who have questions, the call-in number is area code 347-884-8121. We would love to hear from you, hear your experience, hear your horror stories. If you don't feel comfortable leaving your name, your story, I think is extremely important. Director Holmes is in a position where he has the voice of the legislature, you know, not just the Black Caucus, but folks, you know, from all over the state. You know, he's been at the state for a while and has built up relationships, and we really, really don't want to see this time go to waste. We got a great opportunity here. So my next question, again, going back to this United Way survey, and you kind of touched on it, they mentioned that folks are doing a lot of stuff to, you know, try to at least get through the storm. You know, 31% of the folks who responded to their survey have 1 month or less of cash on hand. So that means if this impasse goes on for another month, they could very well be closing their doors.
Right.
Not to mention we've already lost some people, right?
Right.
And then they said 8% of the agencies have already utilized their full cash reserves,
mm-hmm.
and then 25% have tapped into lines of credit, so that would include folks like your agency.
Mm-hmm.
And then of those, 58% are more than $50,000 in debt. So even if they do get the money, they still have this new debt, right?
Provided that the state honors their full contract,
wow.
They have to then go back and pay, you know, those expenses they've incurred, that debt that they've incurred over a period of time. Because, see, what happens is that people are still providing the service, whether they've been paid or not, they're utilizing some way to deal with those expenditures. And
mm-hmm.
if they've figured that out, then they've incurred that debt. They got to pay somebody back if they got a loan, or if they're doing it and they're just sort of not paying, but the expenses are consistently occurring. My example is I got an office and, you know, I owe my
mm-hmm.
landlord for 5 months.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I say bless you to your landlord, because most landlords...
Exactly. Well, we have an understanding of landlord that supports the commission.
That's a blessing. I thank your landlord. I'm not going to be like on Saturday Night Live. They killed my landlord. No, we don't say thank my landlord.
Right. Well, we want to thank our landlord for sure.
Yeah, that is a blessing. And then folks laying off staff. So what other strategies do you think that social service agencies could use to stay afloat, you know, in the short term and then in the long term? And I know you started, you know, to answer that before, but, you know, what are some of
Well, I think on the short term, I think the only thing that agencies can do is try to figure out where there might be some opportunities to get some stopgap funding, or to figure out if there's some way that they can convince financial institutions to, you know, sort of let them, you know, operate with the idea of paying them later, or because I don't think it's anything that's going to happen on the state side until a budget is passed. There's no way that any state agency could fund anybody without the authorization of the budget. So I think it just has to be other alternatives that might be out there via the philanthropic community or maybe, you know, some corporate funding or something of that nature. But but to come together and talk about how this is impacting their particular agencies and their services and their ability to serve the community is a strategy that I think would work and maybe get those stories out publicly so that people would know exactly what they are and people can really understand this impact. Because if people don't know what people are going through, they don't really understand it. So
And are you seeing, too, that people are partnering more, you know, trying to make their limited resources go a little bit further, you know, kind of sharing clients or trying to make sure there's no duplication between agencies?
I think this provides us an opportunity to really take a look at, you know, those kind of things in our community, which would, you know, kind of, you know, help people to understand that maybe there is a need for some, you know, consolidation or some collaborations and, you know, things of that nature. And maybe there's a way to provide the services to the same amount of people, but do it in a more joint fashion or something like that. I think those are the kind of things that could come up as ideas that now you have time to really kind of look at because of the situation that everybody's in across the board.
Okay, I see another caller. I'm going to give this caller what's the comment, just a moment. Hello, caller, you're at area code 773-846-8797. Are you calling with a comment?
Yes, just a comment that that we are very, very in need of the voices of people like Commissioner Holmes to continue to speak out and to tell the full story of how our community is suffering. I saw in the papers last week the coverage, the news coverage that said that the ways that they termed what was happening to our community was gathered under a phrase called collateral damage.
Wow.
Which I think we need to call out our legislators as well as our governor and have our community realize that that is how we are being portrayed in the media, and that that is exactly what happened. That was the phrase that was used, if you remember, in the Afghan wars that described people that were killed, collateral damage.
Wow.
So
wow.
I think it's time for us to understand the immorality of that and that we must have them call out what is really happening, that we're dying here.
Okay. Is it okay for me to use your name? Because I think I recognize your voice. Is it okay if I call your name?
It is okay. Let me see if you recognize my voice.
I do. This is Attorney Jeanette Foreman.
It is.
How you
I was
going to
be
Attorney
anonymous.
Foreman.
I'm fine, Commissioner. You are excellent in terms of the way you're presenting, and I'm very, very pleased. I didn't know your rent was 5 months behind. However, we got to get some chicken dinners going or something.
Yeah,
well, I appreciate
party.
That.
The blue
I appreciate
light
that.
The
yeah, it's gonna be quite a few dinners.
That's right.
Yeah. You know, Attorney Foreman, when you mention collateral damage, I think of folks going to war, and at least on the movies, it always sounds to me like that's something they calculate before they even start the war. They know how many people they're willing to lose order to achieve the goal. So
exactly.
There is a strategy behind what's going on. You know, this is war, let's be clear. And there is collateral damage. I just don't know where the line has been drawn. I don't know how much blood they're willing to be allowed to be shed. And this isn't, you know, not in a literal sense, but unfortunately, if you start messing with social services, it really could become in the literal sense. But in the figurative sense, you know, we really can't take too much more of this.
Yeah, well, if the analogy to what happened in the wars where they refused to let the body bags be shown and they refused to let the media actually show the people that were on the ground dead and the number of coffins that were coming back, that was how they controlled the images of the general public not really fully realizing what was happening. So in this same way, I'm so clear that the director is so important for him to be able to name and talk about the actual damage that is happening to us that's permanent. That, because you're right, Ms. Leonard, it is a strategy that is going on, and that strategy is one that is that our community is being used as the pawn, and we need to take a position against it by showing who is actually doing the suffering, who's paying the price, and how this price really looks in terms of our children that are no longer in daycare, our people who mm-hmm. cannot work because their children are not in daycare, our people that are losing their homes because they cannot go work, our elders mm-hmm. who are suffering because the workers that they depend upon to come and care for them in their homes are no longer there, and they're being therefore shunted into having to go to nursing homes rather than staying in their home. We need to show how pervasive that is, how serious and how damaging it is to our whole economy.
Mm-hmm. And even as I listen to you too, I think about the family. We're talking about moving from I guess caring for people in the home to having institutions take care of them, and that's much more expensive.
Much more expensive.
In the long run.
Much more expensive. One of the stories that I heard was of a 80 some odd year old elder who had a home care worker that came to help her do cooking and things that she no longer mm-hmm. was able to do, and care for not only herself but her husband, who was even more infirm, and both were diabetics, forgetting to take their medicine and so forth. When the home health care worker could not come and friends and relatives tried to fill in blanks, they came by her house, found her back door open where she had failed to close it, found her gas on, and found her sitting in the floor in tears because she was unable to fix a meal. So that's
oh my
a kind
goodness.
Of a poignant story. Mm-hmm. That I'm sure it's replicated all over our city.
Yeah,
all over the state.
Hundreds of thousands. Yeah.
All over our state, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow, and we don't read about these stories. It sounds
right.
So simple, doesn't it?
That's right.
Okay.
Well, it just shows you the impact of government on the lives of individuals in the state. And I think that, to me, it demonstrates the importance of government. I mean, a lot of people say, well, you know, government shouldn't do this and that, but to the extent that you contribute to a structure that's set up to provide this sort of safety net for folk, I think
mm-hmm.
that in itself allows for us to feel comfortable in our ability to utilize these services.
Yes, that's right. That's so true. This is actually what government is supposed to do,
right?
And it has a disparate income or impact on some populations that usually are the populations that are the least able to fight back. So,
mm-hmm.
I'd like the director to expand on what he would like the listeners and other people to do about this. I know we're in this frustrating position of needing to await the actual vote, but what can the average citizen or those who are empathetic with what's happening, what kinds of things can we do to dramatize, to make visible, to move the needle here and cause the mayor or the legislators to move the agenda? And when we say move the agenda, what is it that we are saying we want them to do about it? Is it that we want them to approve raising the taxes back to where they were so that we can have the funds? is it that we're saying that we want them to utilize the same kind of special dispensation that they're making for certain kinds of corporate uses or certain kinds of state uses? Their paychecks are being paid. What can we do?
Yeah, I think you know, this state is a $740 billion economy. And I think to the average individual, they may not see that, because the only thing that gets discussed and talked about is the state's operating budget. I think what we would like to see people do is to reach out to their elected officials and the people in their community or people that they're close to, and ask them to push for not only getting a budget, operating budget done, but also help to identify what it is that they can put into their communities, what type of structure can be created so that this don't happen again. Mm-hmm. So it can help, you know, people can help us start talking about and developing a long-term strategy to ensure that our communities are not used as scapegoats or as collateral damage in these situations where decisions are being made to just not do things that impact us because they're trying to do something else.
Right. So, on that note, I'm sorry, Attorney Foreman, we have all of 3 minutes left before our time goes out, and I want Mr. Holmes to be able to wrap this up, and then we'll be able to go. But what I'm hearing is this sounds like a good conversation that needs to be continued. Next week we'll be having Eric Weinheimer from the Donors Forum, and he'll be talking about strategies on advocacy. And then the following week we'll have Mr. Martiri from the Center for Budget and Tax, and I may have that name wrong, but I think you don't want to talk about CBTA.
Yeah, Tax Accountability Budget. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he will be talking about, you know, the numbers and some of the policies. So I think for the next couple weeks we're going to have this conversation, and it sounds to me like we may even have to continue it beyond that. But, you know, we've got about, 3 minutes, so Mr. Holmes, I'm going to ask you to wrap it up, and then we'll take it on home.
Well, again, Valerie, I really appreciate you giving the commission an opportunity to come on and talk about, you know, the work that we're doing, and, you know, how we our intent is to help our communities move forward in spite of situations like this. I think, you know, again, for us, is as a community, and our Tuesday meetings have sort of developed this. As a community, we need to constantly be talking about different ways that we can engage state government in the development of our communities. It's only going to be us as individuals and people in the community that's going to change the way our kids are educated, going to change the way our seniors are served, going to change the way the health services are provided to us. It's the things that we know are happening every day, but not happening to us in the manner which we would like for them to happen to us, is going to be different unless we just be a part of it. So I would like for people to reach out to the commission. You know, they can easily go to our website at www.iaafc.org and sort of look at what we're doing, and then give us a call at 312-326-0368, provided we're open, to reach out to us and say they want to be a part. One of the things I think strategically we've been able to do is we've sort of given the commission to the community and had the community understand that their voice is as important as any other voices in the state. And so that's the important thing that we try to get across to folks, is that this is the voice of the community, and these are the things that the community say they need, and these are the things that the community say they want to see. So those would be ideal things that we would like to encourage people to participate in and to come together with us on in terms of partnerships.
Okay, great. I got about 15 seconds. Attorney Foreman, thank you so much. I think you have taken the conversation to another level. You helped us to bring out issues that we hadn't thought about before, and I thank you so much, and we will definitely be getting in contact with you. And so for everyone else, I want to say thank you for listening to Nonprofit You Blog Radio Talk Show today. The show is going to be available for download within about an hour, and be sure to tune in next week again. I said that Eric Weinheimer, who's the president and CEO of the Donors Forum, he's going to be a guest, and he's going to share an overview of the Donors Forum's programs. But most importantly, he's going to talk about advocacy for nonprofits and new strategies that can be used. So until next time, thank you very much, and you take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye.